Hey everyone, today we're gonna do something a little different, a little quirky. As we are establishing ourselves in the Las Vegas Valley, we of course are listening to all of you and we're listening to other podcasts. And there's one podcast in particular that has caught all of our attention here at CityCast Las Vegas, and that is the Indie Matters podcast that's put out by the Nevada Independent. And the force behind the Indie Matters podcast, Joey Lovato, who we're going to talk with today. Hey, Joey, how are you?
Hey, David, how's it going?
Oh, well, it is exciting on a lot of levels, but, you know, I think I just want to focus on the excitement of a joint operation, if you will, between CityCast Las Vegas and the Nevada Independent's Indie Matters. So why don't you tell us about Indie Matters? What's it all about? What's your goal there?
Well, so Indie Matters is a weekly show from the Nevada Independent. I've been producing it for 5 years. We're on episode 225 or something like that, 230. And every week we come to you with three stories. It's about a half hour long, and each story is unique from the week. The Nevada Independent reports on politics, policy, education. We're kind of getting to the nitty gritty of the stuff that makes the state work. We cover the state legislature a lot and a lot of election stuff. So we've got a lot of that, but we also try and keep it fun. We try to have some interesting segments as well, especially me. I like to do a lot of human interest pieces. And yeah, it's a great time, and you can find it. It comes out on Tuesdays in the afternoon.
And it is pretty accessible. And I have to admit, whenever I have a little extra time in a commute or even traveling out of state by car, it's one of my go-to podcasts. I just love what you guys are doing over there. And having been a fan since the very beginning, just seeing you get better and better, it's really a joy. And I'm really happy that we can work together. Of course, you know, I have had my dalliance with the Nevada Independent with op-ed pieces. But, you know, our podcast over here is going a lot of different directions. And certainly we learn a lot from podcasts like yours. So let me ask you, what's one thing, if people start listening to the Indie Matters, if they aren't already on the tip, that they're going to wind up loving about it? What do you love about it?
I hope that you connect with the state more. We're a statewide organization, and I think that Nevada is a wonderful state. I grew up here. And I think that the stories that we're telling and looking to tell are stories that make you, you know what it means to be a Nevadan and connect to your state, whether that's in Reno or Las Vegas or in the rural communities. It's a wonderful state, and there's so many interesting stories. And I think that there's not enough reporters out there that are telling them. So we're trying to tell as many as we can. And I hope that every week you come to the show and find a story and you're like, wow, I never even thought about that or never even heard about this. Yeah, that's kind of what I love about the podcast.
You know, you'll always pack it full of great segments, right? So there's usually three segments. Sometimes you do a full podcast on one, but most of the time you get these different ones in there. And, you know, in a strange way, to me at least, they always kind of come together. There's always some manner of thread. Sometimes it's a little more ethereal, but it's definitely a great listen. Hey, Joey, I'm really glad that we are finally able to work together. And I'm looking forward to more future collaborations as we proceed with the CityCast Las Vegas. And also, I want people to make sure they check out the Indie Matters. So do you have a website or something where people can get it directly, or do they just go to the Nevada Independent website?
Yes, the NevadaIndependent.com. There's a podcast tab at the top. You can check it out there. You can also find us on all of the platforms that you find podcasts on, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, you know, wherever you're getting your podcast, just search for Indie Matters. It's one word.
All right, fantastic. All right, everyone, let's listen to a little bit about Nevada state symbols.
Okay, well, I am here with Sherry Hayes Zorn with the Nevada Historical Society. Thanks for joining me.
You're so welcome. It's nice to be here today.
Yeah, and so honestly, this is also an exciting podcast because you're one of the first in-person interviews I've done since 2019. So it's nice to get out of the house again. So we're talking about something really fun today. We're talking about state symbols. This is a personal fascination of mine. Since the third grade, I don't know why, but they've always stayed in my head. I know we have a lot of them. I think we have 26. And I did a video, I guess, in the 2019 legislative session where they passed neon as the state element, which I believe is the most recent state symbol to be added. Am I correct?
Yeah, it is. That is the latest one.
I mean, to start off, what is a state symbol? Why do we have them? You know?
Well, state symbols represent what you consider unique and something that is of pride for your state that makes people want to learn more about your state or come and find these fascinating topics or little tidbits that another state may not have. So that's what I find fun about the symbols. And actually, children are the ones that have been, over the last several years and several decades, have been promoting state symbols and adding to the number.
So why do we have them? Like you said, part of it is like it represents the state, drives people to the state. What makes them important?
Well, I would say the symbols try to capture the character and show what makes Nevada unique and different. Like you said, neon. That's unique. That's Nevada. When you think of neon, it's sexy. And so that's a draw for people. And they think, oh, Vegas. So that's definitely something that not every place has. So actually, in 1893 is when they had the Chicago Fair. They were doing a selection of state flowers and the idea of wanting to know what were the flowers of each state. And that was how state symbols and emblems first started. And then in the 20s, the Federation of Women's Clubs throughout the country were trying to select state birds. And so then that became a thing, and Nevada didn't select our bird until 1967. But, I mean, we had chose our seal, we chose the flag and the motto, of course, early on in 1866. But I think people take pride in these things, and they want to know more about their state and keep adding to it.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the state bird is the mountain blue jay, am I right?
Yes, it is.
I've still got it.
Good job.
And the first state symbols that are added when a state becomes a state, I'm assuming are its flag, probably its motto, its seal. Are there any others that kind of are like every state has this? I'm assuming like state bird and flower are also.
Those are pretty standard ones. You got your flower, your animal, maybe your fossil.
How are they chosen? Who chooses these state symbols?
Well, groups and individuals might push them forward, but ultimately it's our state assembly and legislature that will actually submit them as bills that get put forward to the governor, and then they get approved, and they become part of our Nevada revised statutes under miscellaneous state symbols.
Goes through the legislative process like any other law in the state.
My understanding is it's not supposed to be political. It is supposed to just represent the state, and everyone is supposed to come around, and it's supposed to be a good thing, a happy thing. But what's the best of our state, and what we can take pride in to promote our state?
Do you have a favorite state symbol?
I love the ichthyosaurus. I think that's my favorite. And just the fact it's so unique, and it's at the Berlin Ichthyosaurus State Park. The official name is Lizard of the Shoshone Mountains. That's just it's a magical name if you think about it. And there are 53 or 54 intact skeleton remains, fossils that were discovered there when they started doing digging in the 50s. But what I think's neat about it is that no one even noticed it initially because it was mining. And then it became this great treasure trove, and the state acknowledged it, and then it became a state. So it's a really cool piece, and they're quite large.
Mm-hmm. I also think the ichthyosaur is really cool. But I have also been fascinated by the fact that we have two state trees. We couldn't just pick one, apparently. Can you tell me a little bit about why we have two state trees and what they are?
Absolutely. So what we've got are two, and it's over different decades that we've got with the tree. We have the single leaf pinyon pine. So that was designated as a state tree back in 1953. And then we have the bristlecone pine, which was designated in 1989. And so what's unique is that the single leaf is the only known pinyon pine that is in the United States. So that makes it a very unique tree. But then also the bristlecone is being the oldest living organism dealing with a tree in the world. I mean, the average here is 4,000 years old. So, I mean, just imagine all the history it's witnessed over its time. And so there are states that have more than one, maybe dealing with trees or flowers that they feel are really significant and of importance. And because the bristlecone and the pinyon pine are very unique, I can see why they added a second one to showcase the uniqueness of these trees. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking when I saw that, I was like, oh, we're just trying to add more state symbols. And then I saw that Texas had like 50 state symbols. And I'm like, of course Texas has that many. And California has like 40 something. So we're not even close to them. But I do think that like some of the state symbols seem really unique. I find also really fascinating is the state tartan. Explain to me what a tartan is.
Absolutely. So the tartan actually was designated as our state tartan or our plaid mm-hmm. back in 2001. And we were at that point the 14th state to adopt a plaid.
Really? I didn't realize there was that many.
I was surprised too when I was looking at this. But I mean, we do have an amazing amount of Scottish American heritage. And I think back when Bob Miller was governor, he recognized the first Tartan Day. And so April 6th every year is National Tartan Day. And so I thought, oh, this is wonderful, perfect timing. Then it became a law in 2001 by Governor Gwynne, recognized it, and every year nationally everybody recognizes plaids. Well, what's interesting about plaids that they actually have to be created, they have to be unique in their design and their pattern.
They have a unique Nevada plaid.
Yes, and it represents the state as a whole. Each of the colors represent different parts of our state's heritage. So red is for the Virgin Valley Black Fire Opal and the Red Rock Desert. Yellow is supposed to be for the sagebrush or state flower. White is for the formations of the snow on the mountains of the Sierras. We have the blue, of course, represents the water and also our mountain bluebird. And we have silver and blue within it represents the state's colors. And my understanding is that there's intersections, eight threads, I guess, and eight threads represents, you add that up, represents 64, meaning that the state was created back in 1864. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of symbolism in it. And I know they put a lot of effort into coming up with what it means and how it represents the state. It's very unique.
One other state symbol that I also love is we have a state locomotive, which I have actually seen. It's an Ely, correct?
Yes, it is. It's engine number 40, and it's a beautiful piece. It's associated with the Nevada Northern Railway and the East Ely Depot and Museum. And it's actually was built in 1906, but it was with the railroad that was in Ely from 1910 until they closed in 1941. It was used just to haul passengers. It really has never been altered.
What's our most unique state symbol that you think?
Well, say we've talked about the tartan. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the locomotive, the bird. Something that's unique is our gems. Is you're dealing with your precious and semi-precious gems. And
I find that very funny, too. We have to have a precious and a semi-precious. We can't have just one.
Well, and it truly, I guess the distinction is if it's something that's a little bit rare mm-hmm. and has more value versus other is somewhat the distinction, or if it's something hard to find. Mm. So, like, the precious gem is the Black Opal or the Virgin Valley Black Opal, and then turquoise is our semi-precious. But turquoise can be very fragile because it's very thin veins, and then you actually, when you harvest it and then you cut it to cabochons, it can break easily. But they're amazing pieces, and turquoise can truly be found across all of Nevada and actually has the history of the most mines active, defunct of any of the western states, which is an interesting little fact associated with turquoise. But turquoise has always been used in ceremonies as religious items that have definitely meanings. And of course, with the Native American jewelry of the 20s and 30s.
Well, and I realized we didn't mention silver. We are the silver state. Correct me if I'm wrong, the state metal.
It is. It is a state medal. And so actually it was designated the state medal in 1977, but there actually was a dispute whether or not maybe it should be copper because of the copper mines, Ely. But the fact, it represents the long history of the state and with the discovery of silver. So silver won out in the end.
All right, well, Sherry, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. And thanks for talking about all these fun state symbols. It's one of my favorite topics.
Well, thank you for asking. I think it's a fun topic, and I think kids and adults find it fun to learn more about our state's history.